Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we are back with another episode here. We're going to be talking about a very important topic tonight that I think is something we all need to focus on, and we'll get into that topic here a little bit in a few minutes here. But first off, we got to bring in Sam Bradley. So, Sam, why don't you chat with us a little bit and let us know what's been going on?
Well, I'm out here freezing to death in Colorado, and I hear it's not much different there on the East Coast. And we have Becky DePodman with us, so we're going to get more into the weather later. But, you know, I hear a storm's coming your way. She's over there on the East Coast as well. Hey, Becky?
Yeah, so we're not going to get too much here in Pennsylvania, but the Carolinas definitely going to get some snow, maybe even some ice. Tennessee could see some ice. I don't know how bad just yet, but it's just going to be a pretty potent storm for basically the central U.S. into the southeast, and then rain storms for the Gulf Coast. It's kind of a doozy all around.
Well, that's really unfortunate because what we're going to talk about was a recent incident, in fact, this week in Memphis, which our good friend Jim the Sasquatch, we've actually gotten a hold of him. And we haven't heard from him in a long time, but he you know, this is very serious to him because he's very big part of Memphis EMS, and I guess he knew some folks in this very bad incident. And when you talk about ice, it looks like this had something to do with rain, didn't it, Jim?
Yeah, so thanks for having me on. This is I think everything we talk about is important, but safety is near and dear to me. And but yes, it was weather related. The full report's not back yet, but of course, like with anything that happens in anything, especially EMS, rumors abound, right? And from what I understand, I think that the person driving was charged with excessive speed as well. So I don't know that to be certain. I hadn't heard that from firsthand information, but that seems to be what the media is reporting right now, is weather and excessive speed.
Wow. Well, you know, we're looking at the picture here. Jamie copied us on the article, and I don't know to what extent you want to talk about this, but what was up on the media was that the patient and the medic in the rear were ejected, and at least at this report, were in critical condition, and that's about all we know as far as the condition of the folks there. Do you have any update on that?
Oh, yeah. Are you talking about the patient and the medic?
Right.
Yeah. So it was a two fatalities, the patient and the medic in the back. I know what picture you're referring to. I've seen a couple other ones. What you can't see on the other side of that picture is the ambulance is just, it's like someone took a can opener and just opened it up. The patient compartment, the squad bench is simply gone. The stretcher mount is there. Eyewitness reports, said that that the stretcher was quite a good distance away from the accident. The speed that's being talked about right now is, around 70 miles an hour. And that hydroplaning was involved. Again, haven't looked at the report or anything like that, so it's hard to say. Of course, our hearts go out to our brothers and sisters in that area. So this occurred in Nashville, which is about 3 hours from us. But they were on a critical care transfer to a level one center. The information that I got is that, I think the young lady, the patient, I believe she was 36, had some aortic issues, and they were transferring her to a higher level of care.
Wow, that's really sad. And I know how this affects the whole EMS community when that happens. Well, I guess my first question, Jim, that occurred to me while you were talking about everything flying out the back, are you an advocate for seatbelts in the back? I know that the big complaint about that has always been, well, I can't really do patient care if I'm seatbelted into the squad bench. So what's your thought on that?
I guess you have to be. I mean, I'm an advocate for them on school buses, right? Um, so So I remember, you know, when we went to school, I guess we all did, we didn't have seatbelts there, and we've learned, certainly learned lessons from those incidents. But yeah, there's got to be, and I know there's some ambulance manufacturers that have some type of harness in the back for the medic. Now, would that have helped? I don't know. I just don't know. Would it have hurt? Probably not. But I think the impact was so great. I got this phone call in the middle of the evening, and so the ambulance was from a healthcare system called West Tennessee Healthcare, and that's where I teach at. That's primarily where all my students work, and so I was kind of concerned that, of course, the first thing across your mind is, you know, one of your own, a little closer to you than one of our own, if you know what I mean. And so apparently they lost control of the ambulance, and it hit I don't know if you've been to Nashville before. I know you have, but they've, on their interstates, you know, instead of nice flowers, they've got these rock wall barriers, these natural rock walls. And so that's what tore the ambulance up.
I agree. I think I've actually seen pictures of a device where it's sort of like a harness that the medic in the back is in, that he could still move forward to access the patient. And I'm thinking that even if the squad bench flew out, he'd only have been able to go a certain distance. So if his injuries were sustained from after having flown out the back, it might have helped. Yeah. At least that's what I perceived. Jamie, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, this has been a topic, and Jim and I actually, when we were initially having the discussion about this topic for the show, this has been a topic that's been going on for 15, 20 years in EMS, that ambulances as transport vehicles are not really all that safe as far as protecting the people in the back. The front of the cab and stuff has all of the accoutrements of a passenger vehicle. And everything in the back is basically nothing more than a box van that, you know, a UPS truck for people. And so I think it's important that, you know, there are ambulance manufacturers that are doing some things to harden the back of the ambulance, to harden the box, if you will. But I still don't think it's enough. I think that it's something that really needs a long, hard look at how we do this. And do we need to have the large box styles, or should we go back to something more of a van style ambulance or something like that? I think, you know, I don't know. Every time this comes up, this is an issue that I bring up on various shows I've been doing for years. And I think that this is just another example of how fragile these vehicles are.
Well, Jim, weren't there some new rules on, ambulance manufacturing recently, or was I mistaken on that?
Sorry, you cut out for a second.
Oh, I'm just wondering, I thought I saw some new KKK rules or something in terms of ambulance construction. I didn't read too thoroughly into it, but are they trying to strengthen them?
I think so, but I think what it all comes down to is cost, right? And so, you know, we've been doing the same things over and over, you know, for years, and you know, these ambulance accidents are thank goodness they're far and few between. But when they do happen, it's a lot of the times it's catastrophic. And I think it's one of those roll of the dice. I mean, I teach up at the National Fire Academy. I teach in the managing officer program, where you have medics and you have firefighters in both together. And I teach a safety course there, and it's interesting how the fire service has really stepped their game up as far as safety and hearing protection and seat belts, that the engine will not roll unless you're belted in. And then on the other side of that coin, there's all these things that are put into place for safety, and people seem to shortcut them all the time. And so there's a lot of variables to safety, but I think the fire service is doing a tremendous job in everything from cancer prevention with, you know, decon after a simple structure fire, hood exchanges so we're not carrying that stuff home or back to the station. And, you know, it's incredible that the things that a lot of progressive systems are doing, and we have a lot of progressive EMS systems that probably need to, you know, take a good hard look at, and that may be going on right now, but it's not talked about much, and it certainly may be in a vacuum.
Jamie?
So, Jim, you know, you talked a little bit about the fact that the topic came up that maybe we need a specific focused EMS safety program or class, even at the national level. And I'm curious what that would look like and how that would address things like safety in the back of an ambulance.
Well, I think at its bare bones, and there are some EMS safety courses out there, but a national push with a really robust curriculum is something that I think we need at a national level to, you know, what would it look like? I think it starts out with situational awareness, and it's maybe not just about, taking an EVOC course, just those yearly refreshers that we do for that. We just kind of roll our eyes because we got to go back to it. We'll just dig in deep to the stats of, you know, what's killing us. And apparently this is the safety issue with, you know, situational awareness, walking into a patient's, you know, home and, you know, being met with a violent patient. And, you know, when you think you're going on a chest pain, you get shot as you walk in the door. I mean, that's happened here in the past year, multiple times. So it's everything from just incident safety to driving safety. You could spend 6 days, and that's what we do with applications of leadership and the culture of safety. That's a big, long word, but what it really means is that our leaders in the industry, our managing officers, our supervisors, those need to be the people that really push this aspect. I think we've come a long way from now we have to wear, you know, the ANSI vests on incidents, and, you know, the high visibility, the cones, all that stuff. But that all comes from a national push, and I think that's kind of where we got to go here. It's going to take some time to, you know, get that rolling. But I was actually on the phone yesterday with someone up in Emmitsburg at the National Emergency Training Center, the Fire Academy, where they have both. I just want to plug it real quick. They have both fire classes and EMS classes. So just because it says National Fire Academy, a lot of folks that aren't really turned on to the fire game think they can't go, but that is the furthest from the truth. Every type of model of EMS, every time they have a class, is represented. But we just need more folks to apply, so there's more classes, and we can create classes like what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that again, Jim, because I think that's important. I know that having done many of these kinds of investigations as a paramedic supervisor, the first question they're going to ask is, what kind of driver training did this driver have?
Sure.
And yep. But that begs the question, how do you teach common sense? Because that kind of seems like it was not in play here.
We just have that the normalization of deviance, right? So we don't wear our seatbelt, or we talk on the cell phone, or it hasn't happened before, so we should be okay, right? And so we normalize those practices that we say are bad because it hasn't happened to us. And then we get caught in this trap, you know, maybe slow down. And whatever the reason was for the speed, I don't know. From what I understand, the warning lights weren't on either. So, the thing is, there's only one person that knows what happened, right? And God bless her heart. She's got to live with this the rest of her life. I feel so bad for the family of the deceased, but I feel really, really upset for her too, and I wish her the best, because you know, she's got to deal with this, and that's gonna be a hard road.
Becky, you have any questions? I know this isn't your bailiwick, but you're free to ask.
No, I've just been listening and just sort of, I had no idea there was this much complexity in kind of debate about ambulances, but I definitely agree with what Jim said about the harnesses and seatbelts and things like that.
And I've seen some of the things done in the past when this discussion has come up and I've covered it is bringing in some experts from other industries that are focused on safety. And one of the big ones is the airline industry, you know, with their checklist systems and, you know, their safety record is second to none really in industry in general, because of the focus on safety and the focus on, you know, the lowliest mechanic can ground an aircraft. And no one thinks anything of it because that's the way that's how focused they are on it has to be safe first. And I think that type of culture takes a long time to bring into a system.
Absolutely. So we're here in Memphis and we've got this small, freight company called FedEx that was born here in the hubs here, and they actually have a division within FedEx called Human Factor, and it's for their pilots that, you know, they go through, because most of the accidents that happen are of human nature and culture based, and it's a really interesting division and people to talk to that. Some of the things you never thought of, but you're exactly right, Jamie. I mean, we should be using crew resource management like they do in the airlines. We use that in cardiac arrest. Why, you know, and it's simple to get in a vehicle and drive it, right? But, you know, when it weighs that much and there's so many things that can go wrong, it's like a fire truck. I mean, it's just, it's a ton of equipment going down the road at high speeds that can kill. And same here.
Well, like you were saying, Jim, you know, we talk about complacency and emergency preparedness because people have the "it won't happen to me" attitude, and I guess that's the same for EMS, you know. This happens to other people, but not to us, because it hasn't happened yet.
So I do have a question, actually. So this may be based on just TV shows that I've watched, and I apologize if this is completely off base, but is there any sense of mentality of, like, invincibility with EMS, like, you are running towards the danger all the time? Do you get the sense of you can overcome anything, and that may have played a role in this?
Oh, absolutely. Because we go back to what we do in emergency services, right? And we are invincible because 1,000 times we've got behind that wheel, or maybe 1,000,000 times, and nothing happened. And we operate the same way we do. We you know, nothing's happened, but that one time. That's all it takes, is that one time. And we just, you know, it's amazing to me, you know, I get the opportunity to teach a lot of these classes, and it's amazing to me that you got guys, and I'll refer back to the fire service, that won't put their seatbelt on, they'll buckle it behind them, and the question is why?
What?
Well, I can't get my turnouts on. I can't. Well, you know what? Leave your coat off for a second. You know, so it just happens. It happens, and it's out there, and it's like Jamie said. It's a culture, but I think we all have to. You know, we can't rely on one person for safety. It has to be, you know, what is it with the helicopters? Three to go, one to say no. You know, and as far as weather's concerned, and you're grounded. So, I mean, it just takes a long time to turn this ship. But, the Superman, Wonder Woman mentality, it is definitely there.
Oh, absolutely. And it's certainly the same thing in EMS. Right. Jamie, thoughts?
Well, I think that this is a good place to kind of pivot and talk a little bit about, Jim, you're an educator. I'm an educator. Sam's an educator. Yeah. We all have some role in teaching new responders at some level to move forward. What are the next steps to maybe this has to be generational. Maybe we have to just start with the next generation of providers and teach them something a little different than what's been taught to date.
No, I agree. I mean, it's amazing to and I call them kids, they're grown people, right? But the millennials, right? We sometimes they get a bad rap, but I think they are hope as far as safety goes in that arena, because they have a different mindset. It's not a fixed mindset, right? It's a growth mindset. And they read. They're intelligent. They read research. They go find the facts. And they're like, it's interesting when you have those dynamics in a classroom where you have an older generation and a younger one, what their answers to questions like what we're talking about are. I salute them for that. But I think you're right. It's a generational thing.
And maybe that's the answer, because I mean that there is a generation growing up now and working and moving into the workplace and already in the workplace that don't remember when you didn't wear a seatbelt in the car. They were in car seats for a longer time than anybody else. They don't remember when cars didn't have working seatbelts in them most of the time. They were just there for show. So maybe they are consciously aware that. They feel, I know my kids, they tell me that they feel naked without a seatbelt on when they're in the car. They can't imagine not putting one on.
Right. It's so I think it's like turning an aircraft carrier, it's just going to take time, but I don't think we can sit back and just kind of go, oh, well, it's the flavor of the day. And then, we don't give it any credence or credit, down the road. I think it's got to, what I'd like to see is, and I know local law enforcement does a great job in investigating accidents, but we really don't know. I think you and I were talking about this, Jamie, with the NTSB, maybe, about, with airliner or helicopter, medical helicopter accidents. I mean, they are called to the scene to do an investigation. And what that investigation Let's learn is what most likely caused the accident, how that accident happened, and there's information that we can and detail that we can really pull stuff out of those reports and use that for education.
Jim, on that same note, I'm thinking you're familiar, I'm sure, with the Every 15 Minutes programs, which is a very experiential training using real people and real ambulances and cuffing people up. The idea being a drunk driver has killed someone and they're laying out on the hood of the truck. Would some kind of experiential training like that work in this case, maybe for those providers?
I think for initial education, yes. So the answer is yes. And I think that's good for your EMTs, your AEMTs, the paramedics that are in school. It's experience, it's shock value. It's like, get some thinking. But like was said a minute ago, when you get a few years in, you're invincible. And so I think that's where we've got to, start sending people to develop curriculum at a national level, offer it like the National Emergency Training Center, the National Fire Academy does with their EMS classes, offer it for free, right? And so, meaning that you can either hop on a plane and travel to the nation's capital or just right around it, right around the corner from Camp David, and it's free. It costs nothing. Or the classes are remote, so they're deliverable to your department. So it's still through the National Emergency Training Center and the National Fire Academy, but they bring it to you. So these are things that it's complex, but it's simple, right? I mean, the curriculum's really already out there as far as, you know, safety devices, situational awareness, stress, right? How we're dealing with first responder suicides, things like that. Those are things that we didn't talk about 5 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago. But it's common talk now. So we need to make this common talk as well, and really take a good hard look at what our industry, doing about it.
Well, I know you guys factor in safety to everything you do at Paragon, and it almost sounds like that would be a good class for you guys. Maybe not in and of itself, but certainly with that kind of focus.
Yeah, certainly that's something that we can look at with Paragon, and maybe that's that, the situational, the experiential training, the education. I think what really helps people, adult learners, is being in that environment where you're like at the academy, where you're locked in a room with 25 other responders for 6 days, and so you network with them. You find out that their safety problems or your safety problems, or someone has a great idea that these men and women who are in decision-making positions take that information. Matter of fact, Greeley, Colorado, right? You familiar?
I think so. It's got my zip code on it.
Right, exactly. So their fire department has a really good post-traumatic stress, program. And so it's really innovative what they do. They don't tolerate any bullying. So they really embrace critical incident stress, management, debriefing, and they tackle it in a different way that's not traditional. So a lot of our folks took from these different departments around the country took what Greeley, Colorado was doing, and incorporated it into their policy and procedure and their education. I saw something about Greeley, Colorado the other day about some Christmas lights that was pretty amazing, but that's another story.
Yeah, we do it right here in the country. And yes, Greeley is very much on the cutting edge of everything, and from their equipment to their policies and practices.
And back to Jamie's comment about culture, they have a really good safety culture. But it starts with everybody. But your top folks have to be really really into it. I know some EMS departments and fire services do a monthly safety stand down, right? To where they broadcast a safety issue. Everybody's got to sit down and watch it. There's a message that it opens up with the EMS chief or the fire chief talking about that he's really believes in this, and this is the way things are going to be in their department. And it's you got to grow your culture that way.
Well, I may just have to grab somebody from Greeley Fire Department and get them here on the podcast. What do you think, Jamie?
I think that's a good idea.
I know a guy.
Definitely.
I know a guy.
You know everybody, Jim. It's amazing. When we come to you, you always know a guy. That's fantastic.
He does. Pass that on, Jim.
It's like the – I will. I'll get you his contact information. This guy is the guy that really heads the program up. Fantastic officer. It's sort of like the mafia. I got a friend, right? Everybody's got a friend.
As long as they're good friends and not ones that want to.
It's all family. It's all family. Yeah.
Yep.
I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this tragedy. And I really believe with everything in my heart that out of bad things, good things can come. And I think that's, you know, what's really heart-wrenching for me is this young man had just started his career. I mean, he had just graduated paramedic school in June. And so, you know, he hadn't even begun to enjoy, you know, the family that we all know. So that's a bad thing too. So, but I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys.
No problem, Jim. And thank you for bringing it to our attention and telling us that, you know, this is something we needed to talk about, because we talk about safety and we talk about the wellness of the responder and all those things a lot. But I think that it really needs to be something that's really a national discussion and at all department levels, and that this culture needs to really focus on change. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for, you and Joe and the rest of the folks at Paragon for helping to bring the disaster podcast to people. I just want to remind people that they can check out Paragon Medical Education Group at paragonmedicalgroup.com and over at ParagonMedEDU on Twitter. Make sure you check them out and reach out to them and ask them about what they can do to customize an experiential training event that's beyond anything you've ever done before, specifically for what your system needs, and they can do a good job at that. Becky, where can folks find you?
Usually on Twitter at WX_Bex, on the Disaster Podcast Facebook page. Yeah, those two places are good.
Awesome. And Sam?
Well, you'll find me where Becky hangs out and Kyle, under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11 in most of the social media places, and certainly on our growing Facebook page and on the disasterpodcast.com website. You, Jamie?
Well, you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most places out there in social media, and we look forward to connecting with you wherever you are, but especially on our Facebook group. 650-plus people on the group and growing all the time. Great discussions and comments and questions get posted over there from time to time, and we want you to be part of it too. If you're listening to the episode and you've got an article or something you want to share, don't be shy. You don't have to wait for us to post something. Go ahead and post something in the group and ask a question or pose a comment or pose a new standard for something if you think that's something that we need to discuss on the show. That's how we get ideas for future episodes. And we start that discussion a lot of times over there. So please continue to contribute. Sam, you know, we talk about safety. We talk about the type of medicine we deliver. We talk about sometimes the risks we have to take to do our jobs. But there's risk and there's unnecessary risk or unsafe risk, I guess, is the way to put it. And that's something we need to really think about.
Very true, Jamie. And even though this isn't the kind of disaster we usually talk about, it certainly is for the folks involved and the patient's family and certainly everybody in the system. So I guess I could say disaster safety is not our everyday safety.